for June 17th. I'd entertain a motion for that, please.
Move to approve.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the meeting on June 17th. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Now moving on to CARES Act funds for quarantine and isolation emergency shelter. And we have Vanessa to present.
Yes. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So this, I'm Vanessa Gasson, Director for Clark County Community Services. Today, we are submitting our staff report for a proposal to use the CARES Act Title V funding to continue the operations of the quarantine and isolation site and motel expansion to go from July 1st to October 31st, 2020. Currently, we received some funds, some state grants from the Washington State Department of Commerce to provide, to actually pull this operation up and to serve people that are most vulnerable to COVID-19 and also to address people that are unhoused, that lost capacity in shelters. And so that grant will be pretty much used up by June 30th. And so we, as part of the process to move to the next phases, we are asking for your approval of our proposal to continue the operations for this. And so the quarantine isolation site, there's two buildings out at that site. It is Motel 6. One building has been used strictly for quarantine and isolation. The other building is to address people that are unhoused that lost shelter due to the pandemic. And we are currently putting people into the motel that either are over 60 and also are vulnerable to having underlying medical conditions that may be impacted by COVID-19. Currently, we have 88 people in the motel expansion and one person in isolation. The total request that we're asking for is $2,628,357. And I just want to kind of quickly go over, you have in your staff report kind of the items, but just to tell you a little bit about what's in each area. And then we open it up for some questions. So again, we are using Motel 6. There are two buildings out there. They're charged $60 per day rate per room. I believe there are 118 or 16 rooms. Some of the rooms are not utilized because they use them for storage. And then they also keep a few open in case they have to fix something in one room and move people around. But the motel expansion, the rooms are pretty much full in that particular building. We did also include some costs to repair the room in case the room is damaged. And we've had a few instances where we've had to go in there and do that. And that's a cost about $2,200 per room cost. We also pay to have a separate referral line working with our providers so that when the hospitals, the shelters, the jail, or public health needs to place somebody there, they can actually have direct access. And so that is including a referral line and paying of 1.5 FTEs to help with that smooth transaction. It also includes cost of janitorial sanitation and laundry services for the buildings out there. We also provide food and essential needs. So two full meals and some fruit and snacks per day, along with some hand sanitizers and wipes for those 116 rooms. For the period July through October, and that's through our vendor, Meals on Wheels. We do have a few people that come in with some special dietary needs, so we did have to include some funds to address that when it comes up, and we've had some situations with that. We do need to provide PPE for the staff that are involved in that to include some of the providers. So that includes costs for the PPE that's needed out there. Transportation, we have a transportation vendor that we have used to get people to and from testing. And then also we've needed to include some additional dollars. We are starting to see an increase in behavioral health needs. And so if we need to transport to whether it's a sobering center, detox, over maybe to one of the inpatient behavioral health, we needed to include some costs to include that because an ambulance is much more costlier. We are working with Community Services Northwest CMAR to help us provide that behavioral support. Their staff have asked for some hazard pay And so we have included that in there. And then we also included the PPE for them as in part of the PPE cost. For the temporary staff that we have out there, currently the county is operating this through the temporary staff contract that the contractor, county contractor that we have with that county contractor. And there are currently 5 temporary staff, and we are looking at, we need to increase it. We've been looking at increasing it. We need to add an additional 3 because this is becoming staff intensive to make sure that we are meeting the needs of all those people that are out there. And then again, I am not a general fund department, so anytime my staff work on any kind of program, they need to charge their time to that. So that includes funding for my program staff to charge there. And then of course, the allow 10% indirects to help cover county and department indirects. And that will bring it up to that total budget that I mentioned before. Is there any questions from any of the counselors about the proposal we are bringing forth for you today for approval?
Questions of the council?
Madam Chair, I have a few.
Okay, go ahead.
So, and some of these questions are really very related. I thought the besides the indirect 10% kind of catch-all amount, the hotel damage repair fund seems really high. You did mention a $2,200 repair bill. So I don't know if you're kind of multiplying that 2,200 times all the rooms to come up with that damage repair fund. So is this related to behavioral health that we're seeing such such damage to the rooms? And so are these 3 additional on-site staff only or specifically related to behavioral health support, or what's the mix up on some or match up of some of those additional staffing that you're putting on site? And then finally, to tie that in, we had previously discussed barriers regarding active use of alcohol and drugs, which sometimes are associated with property damage. I'm wondering how we ended up working that issue out as far as CARES reimbursement. Thank you.
So the 2,200 is, that's the kind of the high end of it. If it does not cost that, we're not going to spend it for each room. But usually when we're going to move out, sometimes we have to do some, replace some carpet possibly. We've had an incident where I believe there was some throwing of some furniture. So if there's anything broken, we need to think about how do we fix it to put it back to where the hotel room was when we actually started this back in April. And that's just kind of an estimate because the Department of Commerce has a similar program statewide. And so we've kind of just used what they have allowed for landlords in other places to get when you have those kinds of damages. And so, Michael, I don't know if you want to, if you're on the line, I don't know if you want to add anything more to that, but I do believe he took that times each of those rooms. So, Michael, are you on?
This is Michael Torres, Program Manager, Clark County Community Services. Yes, thank you, Vanessa. And Councillor Medvedi, I do not anticipate that we will be spending that $266,667. That is a maximum damage cost of $2,200 per room. As Vanessa mentioned, we're basing it on the contingency fund proportions that the Department of Commerce uses in their landlord incentive fund program. We have not seen that level of damage at all. And if it occurs, we will have the funds to restore the rooms to original condition prior to turning it back over to the hotel owner. There isn't damage necessary to do that, we won't use those funds and we will not be reimbursed. We will not ask for reimbursement to those costs since they were not incurred. It's also very helpful to be able to have some funds set aside as a contingency repair fund as an incentive for the hotel owner to be agreeable to leasing the hotel with us. So on many levels, it's very useful to have this reserve available if necessary.
And then relating to your staffing costs, the way the staffing broke out is we have one person that we pay to kind of be the overall supervisor that's out there pretty much most of the time. That person also has a second person that acts as the lead to help problem solve issues. And then we had three people that were kind of the staff, people that would run around, help problem solve people with the providers, issues with the vendors, and issues maybe with the people that are staying in or that are needing some assistance. What we're realizing is because there's so many people out there, anytime it could be, I think the max we've ever had out there was maybe about 110, 112 people, close to that. That's a lot of people for three folks to be trying to run around and try to problem solve with. So, and we're trying to keep them out there all day, 7 days a week. And so we needed to add some additional staff. And then because we are starting to see some behavioral health needs out there, if you have issues having with somebody dealing with that, they can take up a whole lot of your time while you're trying to help people get their food and everything else. And so it's becoming staff intensive. The staff out there are starting to see compassion fatigue because it is heavy, you know, out there. They are out showing up every day. We do have security on site, but that security costs are in the public health benefit budget. So that's been part of that. And I guess that's been already approved. That's been very helpful to help problem solve issues when you've had incidences out there. I wouldn't say we overall had a lot of problems. Pretty much people are doing well out there, but we are starting to see more issues coming. And then when the quarantine isolation happens, that's fast. That comes fast and it's intensive. So you have to have staff ready to prepare, because you could have 10 people come in, you could have one person come in. So you have to be ready for whatever comes for that building. So, and Michael, I don't know if you want to add for that any more to that either.
This is Michael. The only thing I'd say is, you know, this is a 7 day a week operation. We're looking at currently, you know, the original staffing was five individuals to provide 7 days of coverage. We try to keep them working 40 days a week. We have two individuals that are exempt. Especially with one full expanded shelter building of, you know, upwards of 80 people there. And then isolation and quarantine building really fluctuates quite a bit day to day or week to week. And having between two and three people on site at one time during the day, 7 days a week, is very, very challenging. It's really, that's what's really forcing the need to increase the available on-site staff from three to six.
So very quickly, so do we have the right mix of behavioral health support compared to these other roughly $500,000 to go to miscellaneous and damage? Do we have enough behavioral health support there for the clients that are present?
I believe we do, Councillor Medvedi. You know, and just to be clear, even though the you know, we have seen an increase in need for behavioral health supports, largely everyone that is there has been, I don't want to use the word compliant because it sounds you know, it sounds more like a jail kind of thing. But I'd say everyone there has been very cooperative, has been very collaborative. They've been very appreciative. Everyone that is there, just about everyone is seeking to use community resources wisely to get their needs met. They're not being resistant, you know, to services, you know, like, and when there are issues, they're generally few and far between. It is important to have more staffing available, as Vanessa indicated, because when you're working with one individual that needs more support and you only have two on-site staff available, that leaves one other person to make sure everyone else's needs are currently being met. But you know, as Vanessa mentioned, we've been working with CMAR, Community Services Northwest, with their AMCI team to provide behavioral health supports. We've been working with SWATCH to provide connections to other community resources. The feedback that I've had from staff and from people there is that yes, behavioral health supports, the requirements are being seen and the needs are generally being met to you know, as best as the community can meet them, and it's being appreciated. We last week we had a feedback survey distributed in the expanded shelter, just to give you a specific example. out of the 88 that were distributed the same day, 42 surveys were returned. Out of those 42 surveys, 36 were just outright positive in terms of the experience while people were there. The other six were neutral, and there were no negative feedbacks that were submitted. And, you know, in the positives, people were being very appreciative of the opportunity to receive services and having their needs met.
And the other thing I want to add, Councilor Menzerby, is that the additional supports that Michael just talked about, so whether it's Southwest Washington Accountable Community Health with their care coordination, or CMAR, Community Services Northwest, with their behavioral health outreach and intervention, the homeless providers that have clients there, those systems are very much engaged. They're being paid for out of different sources. If you look at our proposal, it's just our proposal is basic needs stuff. And so all of the other support stuff that are wrapped around healthcare with Peace Health and the testing with Vancouver, all of that is being paid for, especially the behavioral health, the SWATCH funding, all of that is being paid for either out of Medicaid dollars or state general fund dollars from different funding sources. And so those providers have leveraged those resources to come help these folks. And really what we're asking for is just helping them with their basic needs while they're at this site.
Thank you for all that detail.
Thank you. Councilor Medvedev did ask a few of the questions that I would have asked as well. I do have one other one, and that is about staff and the number of hours. Is somebody there 24 hours or not?
Regular staff are there from 7 in the morning to, I believe it's 11 at night, but there are at least two people on site 24 hours a day.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions of the council?
Yes.
Councilor Lentz.
I believe a little bit, I have a comment and a question. One is that I really appreciate this this proposal, and just want to take a second to thank you all for the incredible amount of work that both this proposal and, you know, since April that this represents. This is a lot. And knowing how low your staffing ratio has been, I'm absolutely supportive of adding funding for more. It's impressive that you've been able to do what you've been able to do with that low of a staffing ratio. So thank you. And I also really appreciate that we're providing wraparound services here, that there are the behavioral health supports, that there are the connections to other providers, as opposed to just what could be done of just, well, let's put them in a room and let's move on. And that this actually, we're paying attention to the full breadth and scope of needs, and that we're trying to actually help some people ideally move through the system, not just give them a place to stay for a little bit. So thank you for that. The question that I have, and this may be more of a question for the financial folks, it's not for this staff report and this proposal, but as we've talked about the CARES funding and knowing that the state has put the requirement of October 31st on us, although the money can be spent through December, according to the federal guidelines, if we could pay attention to whether we think this is going to be a continued need. I know that our October 31st date does helpfully butt up against the date that the severe weather shelters open, so that there will theoretically be a place for these folks to go if we have to close. But if we know that the need for quarantine and isolation is likely to continue after October 31st, if there's a way we can look at possibly, if needed, pre-booking some expenses so that we may be able to use some of the CARES funding for those remaining 2 months. I know that that's all very much up in the air, and that's more of a question for auditor and financial folks than necessarily for the staff report. But this isn't magically going to go away on October 31st. So if we could look into that, that'd be fantastic.
Other comments? I do have one more question or caution. I think as we look at the hotel damage repair fund, that sort of stuck out to me too. And I know that, you know, there's likely to be damages, of course. I'm hoping that we'll watch that closely. I did hear, but I think both of you say that if it's not used, it won't be spent. I mean, if it's not necessary, it won't be spent. But I think that we need to be cognizant of what requests may be made by the hotel at the point when these people exit. So that's my comment. Just be cautious about this amount of money. I mean, it's there, and sometimes people think government has deep pockets. Therefore, they use that money. So if we don't have to, I sure don't want to, but of course want to leave that hotel as it was, or motel as it was when we came. I'd entertain a motion for this item.
Motion to approve, Madam Chair.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve. Let's see. The CARES Act fund for quarantine and isolation emergency shelter. Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Councilor Blum.
The one comment that I want to make on this is it just really highlights the need for the state to distribute all of the funding which Congress intended for Clark County to receive. We have these dollars between what we were allocated, but we could do a lot more if we got the full allotment of what Congress intended when they passed the CARES Act. Yeah. So just wanted to continue to highlight that. This is why that money is important. So that's my only comment.
Amen.
Looking forward to supporting this.
Thank you. I agree completely. Well said. Any other comments or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Moving on to new business. We have a letter to consider for 2020 Clark County Senior Housing, Heroes Award recipients. And I think that letter was sent out to us, and it's here on the screen. Do we need, we can discuss this. Is there, let's just have a discussion about it. And then I don't know what we move to.
This is a request from the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. It's a letter of recognition from the council for the 2020 Clark County Senior Heroes Award recipients. There are currently 9 recipients of this award. It's recognizing their commitments and work with seniors in the community. And I think historically the council has provided these letters of recognition as well. So this is just a request to the council for the 2020 awards.
I would say we should absolutely forward this letter. Are there comments by the other councilors? Okay, seeing none, do we need to vote on this, or is it?
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea just to do a quick motion.
All right.
I will move to approve that these letters be signed and sent.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the letter that will go to the senior heroes that the Agency on Aging has asked for us to do. Is there further discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you all. Next, COVID-19 resolution. We have a resolution sent to us by the Board of Health earlier today. This resolution is resolution number 2020-06-11, and it is basically the resolution that allows or asks our health official to send an application, a written application to the state to move into phase 3.
Move to approve resolution 2020-06-11.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution number 2020-06-11. Is there further discussion? All in favor, let's take a roll call vote, please.
Councillor Lentz?
Aye.
Councillor Blum?
Aye.
Councillor Medveji?
Aye.
Councillor Quiry?
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to councillor reports.
Yes, I have something that I sent around to the council, and Rebecca and Kathleen, I also just sent you the current draft, if you could bring it up. I was hoping that we could send a letter, make a statement in response to and supportive of the sheriff's recent decision to remove the Thin Blue Line and Blue Lives Matter material from sheriff's office building and vehicles. As we heard on, we all received a letter that was addressed to the sheriff, but copied to the council and to Prosecutor Golick related to these Thin Blue Line decals that appear on the back of sheriff's office vehicles. And then the sheriff did make the correct decision, in my opinion, to remove these, and also made that announcement public at a Juneteenth event this past Saturday. That was a really wonderful conversation that he had with a facilitator from the NAACP, talking about the sheriff's office and a lot of the things that are in the public eye right now. And I think it was a great conversation, and his announcement at that event of making this move was very well received. Because the letter was sent to all of us, and because fleet-owned vehicles are owned by the county, not by the sheriff's office, it does make sense, I believe, for the county council to have a response. What I sent around is the letter that's up now. The highlighted areas, I did receive a couple of comments from Councillor Medveji that I fully support. And what I did is, in this original document, I just highlighted those areas. Councillor Medveji suggested that, and we can actually, I will also try to forward his version, because it's actually, it contains those. Sorry, I was trying to multitask. He recommended changing publicly owned items to public property, which I fully support, because publicly owned items is incredibly awkward. And he separated what was a longer paragraph before, the second and third paragraphs there, and moved a couple of sentences. He recommended moving the eradicating racism sentence to the position of second sentence. So it would read, "We believe this action," on the to start the paragraph. So that's let me stop talking now, and Rebecca, I will forward you that edited version so that you have that.
Councillor Lentz, if you could send that to Tina Redline.
Tina, you got it.
I can pull it up from there. Thank you.
Perfect.
Are there comments from the council? I have some comments. I guess I'll go ahead. Councillor Lentz, what do you understand the Thin Blue Line, to mean?
I think that what I think it means is immaterial. I think that, as was outlined.
I'm sorry. No, it is not immaterial. It is material because you are offering this letter for the council to sign, and I want to know what you believe the Thin Blue Line decal means, please.
Okay. I think that it has come to mean to a large and undervalued section of our community distrust of law enforcement. I think that regardless of what anyone claims the original meaning was, that meaning has been distorted, and it means different things.
Would you please?
For publicly owned property to bear an insignia that has nothing to do with the public agency that owns it, especially when that insignia is divisive and means different things to different people, is utterly inappropriate.
Would you please recite what the original meaning of the decal is? You said it's moved from the original meaning. I would like to hear what you believe
the
original meaning was.
I think that what is put forward as the original meaning by those who are clinging to it now was that it was to represent, it was to honor, and they should be honored, the lives lost in service in law enforcement. The thin blue line is often articulated as a thin blue line between order and anarchy. That is a problematic statement.
Perhaps the thin blue line actually means the line, the thin line between law and order and not anarchy, but illegal activities, whatever they are, whether it's enforcement or non-enforcement. And the thin blue line, I guess the other part that's in your letter is something about what blue lives, the thin blue line or blue lives matter. What do you think blue lives matter? I guess I would ask that question. Do you believe that blue lives matter?
I think that we should talk about the topic at hand, which is
the
sheriff's
decision.
It is the topic
at hand. It absolutely is the topic at hand. I want to know
when anyone
believe
in a position of power starts to take whataboutisms into the public eye, that we're avoiding the real conversation, which is that right now
we're talking about
systemic racism. And when you say things like illegal activity, when you try to compare a Black Lives Matter with a response Blue Lives Matter, when you fail to talk about systemic and structural racism that is at the heart of these issues and that have led people to protest because of ongoing injustice and inequity, injustice, that we need to be responsive to that and to instead come forward and say that this is not relevant, that we quibble with some of these small words that mean so much to some people. I find it not only disheartening, but deeply indicative of the amount of work we have to do.
Yeah, what I find, Councillor Lance, is this is very disturbing to me. I do not agree with what the sheriff has done. I completely disagree with it. I believe I honor people who have given their lives in the line of duty to enforce laws that we as leaders make. And they have to go out there and enforce these laws. I believe their lives matter. I think it's horrible when people are discriminated against, and I feel empathy for those people too. That does not mean that we have to set aside the people who defend the laws that we write, that we place. And I think I do not agree with this letter. I will not sign it because I do not agree that we have systemic racism in our county, period.
I appreciate you going on the record with that. And I look forward to sending a letter with the signatures of those who do support moving our community forward. I want to say that talking about supporting people who want to eradicate systemic injustice does not mean setting aside law enforcement, does not mean undervaluing others. This isn't pie. It's not like there is a certain amount of justice to go around, or there certainly shouldn't be. I am very grateful to our law enforcement officers who do do excellent work. That said, there are a number of people in our community who deal with injustice every single day. And when they come to us and tell us that a decal that shouldn't even be on the police vehicles because it is not a county insignia, when they come and tell them that that makes them concerned about whether or not they can trust law enforcement in our community, that is something worth listening to. And I very much appreciate the sheriff recognizing that in order for us to have productive conversations, we need to remove barriers to those conversations. And I thank him for making this decision that I know wasn't easy. And if you don't agree with it, then I welcome you not signing this letter.
Other comments of the council?
Madam Chair, I do. And I appreciate the vehemence on both sides here. I want to press a couple points that, number one, I didn't know the response because it was not publicized. And I understand the mayor's reasons for doing that. And I look forward to the summary of the discussion points with the sheriff and the NAACP. I think we owe a personal response back to the NAACP on this letter. So that's number one. Number two, this was the sheriff's decision. And I know each of us spoke with him personally, and it was a hard decision. And he really, number one, buck stops here. He took full responsibility. I thought his insight into the issue was heartfelt, and he really worked hard on that response. It was his letter, his decision. He took ownership of it. And for that, I think I greatly admire him standing up and doing that. Now, and in that letter, he did detail what that thin blue line flag meant to him. And quite frankly, it meant the same thing to me. I support law enforcement. I've had law enforcement in my family. I've had a son that graduated from the academy that their cadet class had that flag emblazoned on their back. That flag meant something very, very different to me and means very different things to those in the law enforcement community, especially at a time when a law enforcement officer dies in the line of duty. He detailed that in his letter, and rightfully so. And, you know, I show my full support to law enforcement. That's a different issue from whether or not there could be better reforms, whether we could have dash cam and body cams, whether there could be different arrest protocols and standard operating procedures. Techniques and tactics used by the police are always subject to review and reform. Those are all separate issues, and I'm glad to enter into them if we can do so in the Law and Justice Committee. So you can show your full support for the rank and file, for those that are on the streets, that are giving their lives to our community to enforce the laws, and have hundreds of police contacts every day across the nation that are successful and peaceful and really reflect them being our ambassadors to enforce law and order on the street. So I support law enforcement. I support reform. I think the message here is one, I want to support the sheriff in his tough decision, and I want to let the guilds know and the rank and file know I stand behind them. And I support you as well. And most of the community, I think, still greatly appreciates the honor and dignity they bring to their jobs every day, but for the few bad things that occur by bad apples across the nation that are always accentuated and highlighted. So this was the sheriff's decision. I want to show support for it. But as importantly, we need to recognize what this flag has come to mean and other circles. I will admit, I went on, when I got that letter, I had to research it, and because I hadn't heard any of these counter interpretations of the flag, because it never meant that to myself or my family, who somewhat is, I mean, I've worked 30 years in and around with law enforcement, and I appreciate what they do every day. So I had to research it, but it exists nationally, and it has for a few years, that there's been this counter interpretation of the flag. I don't think this letter by us weighs into that, whether it's truth or not the truth. I think that is irrelevant. I think showing support for the sheriff and his tough decision and recognizing out in the community that there are these other feelings, and going to the point of the public property, you know, the American flag is our flag. The state flag is our flag, you know, to serve and protect. Those are all emblems that should be on public property. Anything outside of that really shouldn't be supported by public dollars in any way. So as far as symbolism, I think it is just a bland statement to say there should be very few things on public property. And as far as symbols, the American flag, the state flag, you know, that as far as flags, that's as far as it should go. And that's not to show disrespect to our police in any regard. So I support the letter and would agree to sign it as amended.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Just a moment. I just want to make a comment here about this letter and how it doesn't make a statement about our law enforcement. I think it does, because in the second paragraph, it's saying that we're taking meaningful action to eliminate hate, bigotry, and racism in our county. And we must lead by example. That is saying that we actually, by honoring these public employees, by the way, which our law enforcement are, is that we are eliminating this that honors those who have lost their lives while enforcing the law, are basically hateful, full of bigotry and racism in our county. So I'm sorry, I do not agree that it doesn't make mention that somehow we're supporting our police by doing this. Our sheriff's office, our deputies, I do not believe that. I think this is a direct letter that makes them be respond one of the people in our county that's creating this systemic hate, bigotry, and racism. So that is why it really obviously brings out passion in me here about these are law enforcement officers that are actually being basically being responsible for the racism in our county. And so I just had to make that comment after your comments, Councilor Madison.
Madam Chair, and I share your thoughts. I don't think this letter says that, but I guess it could be read in different ways.
Councilor Glom.
Support what Councilor Medjugorje and Councilor Lentz said, that I think it was a very challenging decision for Sheriff Atkins, and I appreciate his ability or his willingness to make this decision. Had a long phone call with him as he was processing this, and really appreciated his thoughts on that. I also appreciate the collaboration on the letter. I think the changes that Councilor Medjugorje suggested are spot on and make it very clear what this letter is about. I agree that we need to support law enforcement. I don't think you'll find anyone who says they don't support law enforcement, but we don't support law enforcement by talking about a sticker. We support law enforcement by passing budgets that provide them the resources and the tools that they need. We support law enforcement by having policy conversations with the sheriff and with the guilds and with the community about what does effective public safety look like in Clark County, both from the sheriffs and from the court system, and addressing the systemic problems that are there. That's how we show that we support our law enforcement deputies. And I you know, they put their lives on the line on a daily basis, and they deserve our support for that. But as we work to better improve the relationship with the community in all of these issues. So appreciate the work on this letter, and I also will support it.
Further discussion?
I just want to say I thank the two councillors for your support of this. I'm going to make a friendly amendment to the amendment, which is I just realized we dropped a word or need to remove a word in the first paragraph, fourth line down. In making that change, we just left something in or left something out. Council agrees these displays are not appropriate for display on public property. Would we agree that we should add the word display in there? Okay, so for our final version, we'll add that change in. I appreciate this conversation. I think that Councillor Blum made a very important point that supporting law enforcement is a much larger issue than a sticker, and that in general, this does come down to needing to just walk the walk of public service. And for our public property, we should not have things that clearly show such division.
Okay.
I'm supportive of that word change. Councillor Medved, is that?
Yes, I believe it just corrects an oversight at in the amendments. I just want to make one further point. We do need to support publicly, not only through our budgets, support for the rank and file for law enforcement, whether in the cities or in the county. There have been some public displays already, as there were for high school graduations. And so there have been some spontaneous neighborhood parades in support of law enforcement. And I know there's another one coming up this Friday. So I ask the public to show their support for law enforcement.
Okay, moving on to the next item. Work session requests, none. Does Lindsay have a report?
I haven't heard any, and I don't believe she's on.
Okay. Then we'll move into executive session. Are we with no action for collective bargaining for 10 minutes?
Yes, and this will be on a different WebEx.
Oh, okay.
You'll have to log off of this one, and there's one on your calendar.
Okay. So our meeting is adjourned.